You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
My name is Liv Moore, and I died, sort of. I had a promising career and a great fiancé. Then I went to the world's worst boat party and got turned into a zombie. Now I work at the morgue for access to brains, but brain eating has side effects. I take on the victim's personality traits and have visions which I use to help solve their murders. I work with a detective who thinks I'm a psychic, and my boss, the medical examiner, the only person who knows my secret. I'm a crime-fighting zombie.
Welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks. This is our iZombie podcast. My name is Heather, and I'm joined by my podcasting partner in crime, Alex. Hello, Alex.
Hello. Have you missed me?
Well, no. It was only yesterday that we were talking and ranting and ranting and ranting and ranting. I feel sorry for everybody that's going to be listening to that podcast, which has nothing whatsoever to do with iZombie, because I don't think we're going to be ranting as much in this episode. We're going to be talking about season 1, episode 5, Flight of the Living Dead. And again, I like their titles. I'm not changing it. That's our title. This is weird.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I love it when they go into puns, especially, you know,
I love puns.
Bad ones. Come on, those are the most delicious ones.
I love the puns. I really, really do. And if you knew my father, you would have known why I like puns so much. And it's something that they continue in all of their title cards too. The one that I was disappointed in, and not because of it, but because they spelled Liv, L-I-V-E, and not L-I-V, but you had Liv Till You Die, you had the Buddy Holly story, you had Boughs of Holly, because we had our dead girl's name was Holly. Pale in Comparison. I loved that one. I thought that one was really great. Mourning After, like they are in mourning. And then I think our two favorites, mine I really liked was Terminal Velocity, because it did play into the whole crime that got this whole episode started. Alex, of course, really loved Friends with Death Benefits.
Come on, there is something that's awesome. Incredibly awesome about that title card. You have to admit it. It's awesome.
They were all really fun, really, yes. Except for the fact they spelled Liv, L-I-V-E. I think somebody didn't check the spell check on that.
Hey, person who writes title cards, you had one job. One job. And you wasted it. Such an opportunity. Gone forever.
I blame spell check.
Yeah, probably. Autocorrect.
And
autocorrect.
Auto-cucumber. Auto-cucumber. That's what I always call it, auto-cucumber, which is the bane of my existence, is that. Let's go ahead and start talking about the episode, and we're going to get the crime, well, the first crime out of the way pretty quick, and that plays into the whole Terminal Velocity, where we have this whole team of energy drink people that are skydiving. I'm going to say my one real complaint about this episode is I've been skydiving before, and why would you be skydiving anywhere near where you could be skewered on trees? That's just skydiving 101. You don't do that. I guess it's because she got drugged by the GHB and couldn't control her risers and direct everything, but that was my only flaw, really, with this episode, which should tell you this is not going to be a ranty episode. There's my whole rant. That's my rant.
But this is your problem. It's been my experience, on the other hand, that every time you skydive, you end up impaled on a tree branch. Every single episode of television that featured skydiving ended up the same way. CSI, now iZombie, I don't know how many other procedural dramas. Every single skydiving idiot that goes off ends up in a tree. Impaled on it. So why would you try it? Don't you watch television?
Skydiving's fun. I've been skydiving before. That first 12,499 feet, easy piece of cake. It's just those last few inches that you have to worry about. Otherwise, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I have heart palpitations when I have to go on a ladder. My mother has to stand next to me. Because there are things that are too heavy for her. to lift, and I have to do them. And to do that, I have to go up the ladder. So I don't think skydiving is anywhere near my future plans. Nope. Thank you very much.
So you're kind of leaning more towards Peyton, who we have a brief, but we do have the return of Peyton in this episode when she says, "Don't jump out of planes like nature intended." That's you, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I could, you know, me and Peyton, we're soulmates because I relate to her in that episode so much. Jumping out of planes? No, thank you. No, I'm going to stay here with my feet on the ground. And me and the ground, we're buddies. But I don't want to be splashed on it.
Well, I did like the return of Peyton in this, and I like how they set this up. That first, we see the skydivings going up there, and I do love that line, "May we never go to hell, but always be on our way." I thought that was...
Oh, that was nice.
That's a good mantra one there, and it doesn't mean you always have to skydive. That could be interpreted as almost anything. But after she does get killed, we have Liv and Ravi waiting there on the crime scene for them to get it done. And Liv is like, looks like she's actually relishing in the fact that, you know, they're out there in nature and they're waiting for this. And yeah, this should be a good brain to have until she gets that call from Peyton.
Yeah.
And we find out that this isn't a random person, that this is a former friend of theirs, somebody that they were in the sorority with until these two kicked her out for being so reckless, so out there, so, you know, living life and playing music too loud and all that kind of stuff. How did you like the fact that our victim this time, or our entree, pretty much every victim is really Liv's entree there, which I do have to mention, I love that line too when she's laying there and she says, "Of everyone here, who would you eat first?" She's starting to really relish, I think, her zombiness with some of that stuff. But how did you like the fact that this victim is not somebody, it's not an artist, it's not this serial killer, you know, it's not that, you know, whatever, all these people that don't have a connection. We finally have someone that really has a connection to Liv.
I found it interesting because it gave us a different way to approach everything. Because like you mentioned at the beginning, when they are waiting for the body to be, I don't know, taken down
from removed
the tree, yeah. Removed, whatever, they're kind of, you know, chilling and relaxing and making jokes about how Liv is going to eat the brain, you know, throwing out different types of meals and everything. And it's, you get this vibe that, hey, we're comfortable with this. We got comfortable. Mm-hmm. I'm a zombie, I'm enemy, and we joke about these things. And most of the time they don't see the victim as people, as a person, you know? It's a victim, it's a means to an end, which most of the time is catching the killer, right? And that lighthearted exchange at the very beginning of the episode kind of proved it. That, yeah, they can make jokes because that dead body up in a tree, it's not real. It doesn't register as a person who died up until the point where Liv eats their brains and she takes on their characteristics. So
yeah, they're a cadaver, they're a future crime, Ravi does the hashtag YOLO.
Yeah. But when Liv gets the phone call from Peyton, it's like suddenly, you know, this reality crashed into her, and that's not a dead body, that's not a faceless, nameless victim. That's Holly. Mm-hmm. And I really like that sudden change, because it forced both Liv and Ravi to look at the crime, look at the victim from a brand new perspective, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that part I really, really liked.
Yeah, it really humanized it, because even when they were in there, she's talking in the morgue, and she's talking about how Holly was really the opposite of her pretty and pink Liv self.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, like, dying is just a consequence of living and you know, really being adventurous, and whereas Liv was so on the straight and narrow. Ravi's telling her, you know, you don't have to eat her. We've got other people. You can have other brains. And she's like, no, I need to know if it was foul play. I need to know. I owe her this. It really became something personal, not just, okay, well, I need to eat, or okay, this is a crime that I need to do. It really took on that personal moment, which I do like.
Yeah, and I think the episode itself was very, very strong and very good, but I think that particular way that they dealt with it, that new angle that they took, really added to it and improved it even more.
Mm-hmm. And it was nice seeing her. We've seen her take on these other traits, some that have made you uncomfortable, like the very sensual artist. We've seen her become very cold and methodical. We've seen all these different traits. I liked seeing her take on this love of life about her. That, like, when she even comes out and is about to get in the car, and she's like, no, let's do the bike. And she's biking to work, and this huge smile on her face, and just enjoying life. It was really nice and refreshing to see. And I think it was time for that part of her personality to be explored and to come out.
Mm. Yeah, plus we've already learned that she retains the skills that she learns through the brains, right? Like,
right,
with
some,
her drawing.
Yeah, some portion of it,
and
yeah.
Even though nobody said it in the episode, I kind of like the idea that part of Holly, that living the life and enjoying it to the fullest part of Holly, lives on in Liv.
Mm-hmm.
So
to speak.
Yeah, so to speak. So even though Holly's dead, something of her personality remains. And I think if anybody would mention it in the episode, I think it would be a nice tribute to the character of Holly. And I think Liv would appreciate it even more in the end. But they didn't, right, which I'm not saying is bad, but it's something that I thought about when I watched it. So was nice.
I can definitely see that. I really did like seeing her like that, and I liked the way. I mean, we really didn't see a lot of flashes because this part of the crime wasn't super important. In this one, it really was, I think, the skydiving crime was more to set up various other things in the episode, which I'm sure we're about to get into, because there's not really clear lines in this episode where we can divide it and say, we'll talk about this later or that later. Everything kind of meshes in. Once she eats the brain and sees that Holly was supposed to be last, and this other guy was kind of freaking out and was yelling at her, you know, to go and all that. And she gets that little bit of there's something wrong. So she, of course, presents it to Clive to investigate. That's when we start meeting all the other people that were part of that troop. And we have that publicist chicky lady who was pretty stereotypical.
Yeah,
something like that. Yeah, she was. I didn't even write her name down that so much. I'm like, you're pretty stereotypical, but you're just serving a purpose. You had the other guy friend, I guess his name was Ren. We're getting into some names here again. We had Carson McComb, who is your hotshot. I'm, you know, Olympian.
Fun trivia. Carson was played by the same actor who worked with Rob Thomas on Veronica Mars, where he played a character called, and I kid you not, Dick. And his full name was Richard Casablancas, but everybody on the show called him Dick. So that was amusing.
I can see him doing that, because the way he delivered that line, my face is my passion, I'm like, oh, that's beautiful in how narcissistic and self-absorbed it is. That was just such a great line. Like, but how they're slowly bringing all these different people in. And then we have the last one that brought in, which this will be the first, last, and probably only time you're going to hear his name as it actually is in the show, because we have a thing against how they name some of these characters.
Seriously.
But we had that final, who was supposed to be the final jumper and wasn't, Lowell Tracy, whose name you will now be referring to as?
Arthur Pendragon. Because that's who he is. Technically, actor's name is Bradley James, but he's Arthur Pendragon, once and future king of Camelot on BBC's show, Merlin. I'm just saying.
Can I tell you, this is another case where a lot of the guys' names, I'm like, can we just use their real name? Like with Malcolm's name, you know, can we just use their names? Because the show's names are just Lowell Tracy. I guess he's supposed to be a musician and be all hot and all that kind of thing. But really? Lowell Tracy?
No, Arthur Pendragon.
Okay, so just in case, listeners, you hear that Arthur Pendragon, that's who we're talking about.
Which, by the way, makes sense, because you think Arthur died. Nope, he became a zombie. Makes perfect sense. I'm okay with that theory.
The thing that I think I really liked is when they pulled him in to interrogate him, and she walks in and is introduced, and this is the only time I've heard her introduced like this, but he got the moment of being us, the viewers there, when Clive introduces her as Olivia Moore, and he goes, Liv Moore. Huh. I'm just like, I love that. And that was that first clue. You know, when he wants to talk, let's talk about you more. I was like, I wrote down, it's like he knows that Holly is there. It's like he sensed something.
Mm.
And I didn't necessarily know that they were going to go the way they did. But when we jump forward to the memorial, when he's making this Bloody Mary for her and is pulling out all this hot sauce, and we find out that he's a zombie too, and he recognized her as a zombie. I loved that moment, and I loved that twist that I didn't see coming, because I really thought she was going to be the lone non-baddie zombie. So, I mean, it's like we have a new team zombie. We've got to come up with new names. There's the good guys and the Blaine guys. And
well, I'm perfectly okay with calling the team good zombies Team Camelot, for reasons I don't know why. It just has a good, you know, sound to it. But I have to agree with you. From the very beginning, I thought it would be Liv versus Blaine and all his the evil zombies. Because Liv is a good guy, so she's not going to make zombies. I mean, she broke up with Major and his shirtless glory that we saw last episode, because she was afraid she would make him a zombie. So yeah, mm-hmm. It was pretty obvious that they were going for Liv versus evil zombies. But here we have Arthur Pendragon, who's so awesome, and apparently a good guy. Though, you gotta wonder, how does he get his brains? But I'm not going to question him, because Arthur is inherently good, and we love him, and I really hope they're going to bring him back. I really hope that this wasn't just a one-time thing.
I think they've got to, just because of the way they set it up. He was very smooth, which is kind of opposite of his Merlin character, because Arthur was not smooth. He was not smooth at all, but he wasn't supposed to be. But little lines, like when he was like, it's so out of character for her to be dead. And I think telling you all this actually gets me a better chance at a date. The way he's doing things, the way he's setting things up, I don't feel him being pushy. I just feel him kind of like that moment way back in episode 2 when Blaine first talks to Liv. And you have that few little moments of, I thought I was the only one, so did I, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And there was that moment where Blaine actually was, quote unquote, human, where, you know, like, oh my gosh, and how do you do this, and blah, blah, blah. I felt that too. I like how he's reaching out to her. You know, I knew the moment that I saw you, that we're both zombies, and them talking about different things, you know, and him talking about, like, how she was so happy when she could finally open up to Ravi, when she could let it out and be herself. He has somebody now that he can be himself with, and she does too, because it is different confiding in Ravi, who's still human. Alive and human and doesn't need deep brains, and somebody who really does understand what it's like to go full on zombie mode.
Yeah. Although, once again, we get, is this the preferred nomenclature? You know, is this the wording that I'm supposed to use? I love how there's no set vocabulary. That everybody, and it's obvious that they are making things up as they go. Which is awesome, because that's the thing with most zombie flicks. When the viewer enters the world, everything's already set up. They are zombies, there are walkers, there are moaners, whatever you call it. But, you know, the wording and the vocabulary and everything is already set up. And you enter the world and you just have to, you know, adjust and take on what they give you. But here, they are still exploring this. This is still a new thing, and there are no big hordes of zombies excepting, you know, Blaine's evil enterprise. And they are still learning, not only about themselves, but about how they relate to the world. Like, rage on, full on zombie mode, you know, how everybody has their own words to describe what happens. And I love it. I love it because it's like I'm seeing the world being created before my eyes. And it's awesome.
Well, you know, something in all the different shows you were mentioning, like something I do like on Walking Dead that they do is every time they find like a new group of people, those new people call the walkers something other than walkers. Everybody kind of, here's our name, and it becomes acceptable. You know, some people call them roamers, and some people, you know, whatever. And you have things like on In the Flesh, where they it kind of becomes universal to call them rotters. So you have these different words. Yeah, this is one where everybody is still feeling their way. And so this has to be new enough that really zombie is the only normal term, quote unquote, because of zombie movies.
Exactly.
But, you know, I don't want to call myself that. You know, what do you call it when you get all red-eyed and all this? And she's like, full on zombie mode. He's like, okay, sure, we'll go with that, you know. I thought that was good. The way he was just so at ease with everything. And talking about, like, dyeing his hair and, you know, to keep it, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, there's, like, the roots. Of, you know, here's my roots and all this. And how he looks non-zombie, but how he knew the minute he saw her. You know, it was the telltale white blonde and all this kind of stuff. I love that. And I love that here's one, too, because I don't really remember Blaine talking to her about more details about full-on zombie, the way he talked about the fact that he felt it coming on the plane. And the reason that Holly went first was because he knew that it was coming and he wanted her to be safe. So you go.
Yeah.
And then he realized, wait, I'm up here and there's still a pilot. So now I have to go. And now I've had to wander around because I didn't want to go anywhere near people while I was still in this. And I thought that was interesting in that he was wandering around for not just a couple minutes, but for quite a while, because he was separated from everybody for like 30 minutes. Liv is, I wonder what snaps you back out of it, because Liv snaps back out of it pretty quick. Like the first episode when she does it with Plow Guy, the dirty cop, and she's all like that. And then Clive comes up behind her and she undoes it. You know, she quickly goes out of it with Ravi in the episode with Marcy when they're down in the thing. She quickly comes out of it with her brother. So what is it that snaps them out of it? What does that? And why was he going so long?
I do actually have a theory about it, because Liv has this kind of exceptional arrangement like nobody else has, because she has regular, even daily, access to brains. And I seriously doubt...
And a choice.
Yeah. And she can choose from many, many brains. Like, you know... So, I don't think any other zombies, no matter the team affiliation, you know, good or bad, have that much access to brains? And what if it's, and we already saw that brains keep you sane, keep you you. So I'm, right now my current theory, which can still be proven wrong, is that it depends on how much brains you actually eat, how regularly you get your fix. Because the more, right, the more you remain you, the more control you have over yourself. So that might be it. And if Arthur isn't feeding all that, you know, regularly, like every other day or so, but mm-hmm. has longer periods of, well, famine, so to speak, then he mm-hmm. might have, you know, he might need time to recover from the full-on zombie mode or whatnot.
Right, that's a good point.
Yeah, but I have to say, when he started coming on to her, I enjoyed it because, well, guys got game, so you gotta enjoy it.
Yikes.
But when it was revealed that he was a zombie, I, for a really brief, tiny little second, I was afraid that they are going towards a love triangle. It's a CW show.
It still could be.
It's a CW show, and they, you know, live on love triangles. And I, after 6 years of Vampire Diaries, I can honestly tell you, I'm done with love triangles. I am over them. But at the same time, I kind of enjoyed it because the way Arthur left the episode, he wasn't pushy, he wasn't insisting on them going out because, hey, we're both zombies, let's get it on. He left the episode, but he remains an option. And from the look of it, both Major and Liv wouldn't consider this being a conflict, because they are no longer together. And Liv really looked surprised that, hey, I might be into this guy. But it looks like if the love triangle ever happens, it's not going to be high on conflict. Which is a new idea, and I might even want to see how it goes.
I mean, you kind of bring up the thing that was the only other, and I'm using air quotes here, problem I had with the episode, because it's not really a problem, was the fact that in our last episode, we had this big thing when Ravi becomes the roommate, that Liv was doing this, and Major perceived Liv doing this to be a way to keep him in her life, that she's not done with him. And then you have, when he walks in on Liv and Arthur.
Thank you.
I'll acquiesce to Arthur Pendragon, to our hot zombie, that she comes in and interrupts, and she, you know, he leaves, and I did like that with Major being so worried, she was able to comfort him, and they genuinely comforted each other at the moment.
Yeah.
But then he said, sorry if I interrupted something, it's bound to happen someday. I'm like, wait, just in the last episode, you're all, woohoo, I'm roommates with Ravi so that we can maybe still be together, and now he's kind of moving on, which is actually good, because we shouldn't have him being this lovesick puppy sitting mm-hmm. there waiting, and he's obviously got a storyline he's going to go into that we'll talk about in a minute. But I do like the fact that he is still, I think, the love of her life,
mm-hmm.
Major is. But because of something that is very real in her life, or death, the fact that if she even scratches him, he could become a zombie. We don't know how much,
yeah,
like how deep you have, like, does it have to be, you know, you're really tearing into flesh kind of scratch, or is it just, I got a hangnail, oops, you know, that he could be infected. So she's got to be careful around him. Here's a guy that, like you said, isn't being pushy. He's not saying, well, because we're zombies and we're both hot, we should be together. He seems to be really intrigued by her and is able to let his defenses down because he knows he doesn't have to worry about that whole thing again. If I scratch her, she'll change. She already is one. And she can feel the same about him. So it opens up this different dynamic. I can be intimate with you. I can't with him. It kind of reminds me of, and I think I brought this up in the first episode, the show Pushing Daisies, where our main guy, if he touches a dead person, they can come back to life. And if he touches them again, they die forever. And he ends up bringing his childhood sweetheart, the love of his life, back from the dead. But if he ever touches her again, she will be dead forever. So they have this thing where they love each other and they want to be together, but they touch through plastic. Like they actually have screens, things that keep his skin from ever touching hers because he's so scared of that. And it kind of reminds me of that. It's like this forever. We want to be together and we're going to do everything we can to, but we can never touch. We can never kiss. We can never hold hands because you'll die. And that's kind of the feeling I have with Major and Liv. So while that's happening, yeah, here's this other opportunity that, okay, he totally had me at the end with, you know, he brings her that super hot sauce that only a zombie's going to appreciate how hot that sauce is. Mm-hmm. But when he says the line, she's the only one in color, which is odd because she's so pale. I'm like, oh, that's so sweet.
He won me with that line. I was like, yeah. Whatever you say, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, please, Arthur Pendragon, let's go out. I can date you. If Liv doesn't want to, I can date you.
And that's something that could so easily be a super cheesy line. I'm going to give it to him because there's a lot of lines that he had in this episode.
But he delivered?
Yeah, that easily could have been cheese, camp, eye rolling. If I ever heard that line, I would just groan and walk away. But the way he delivered them, I'm just like, oh, melt, okay. I get it, I like it. So,
yeah.
I want him to come back because of that. Because I like how they are together. I like how giddy she was. Like when Ravi's talking with her, she's just giddy about this. And, you know, Ravi is, of course, just asking, he wants the scientific info. Well, hey, will this new zombie come in for tests and things like that? And she's just all smiles. And he's like, was the zombie subject in question hot? I'm like, I love Ravi because it's like he's suddenly going, oh, wait, she's talking like a girl in lust. And shut up or I'll eat you. It was a great play, them. Yeah. Which, actually, if you think about it, that now puts Ravi in a weird position because Ravi is roommates and with becoming Major. Really good friends with Major.
Yeah. But come on. So, was the zombie in question hot?
Hot? Yeah.
Well, yes, also Ravi. Mine. Yes, Ravi. He was. He was smoking. I'm just saying.
I really do hope they bring him back because I'm finding the way they're weaving these characters in together. Because in those first episode or so, it really seemed like, well, we have Liv when she's with Ravi and Liv when she's with Clive and Liv when she's with Major. And, yeah. You know, everybody seems separate. But the way people are being woven together, it seems to work for me. It seems natural and not forced, and I see places for everybody in the story, and I hope that continues.
Mm. I like how in a short period of time, really, because 5 episodes, what is it? They managed to flesh out the majority of their characters. I mean, this was the one thing we were so worried about back when we were talking about the pilot. That everybody except for Liv seemed so two-dimensional. But the longer they go, the more we learn about them and the more they fit into the story without the story being about their connection to Liv. And I enjoy that because it shows them as separate individuals, you know?
Right. Which is really important because every single one of them, especially, I'm going to give it to Major. Major could really just be this two-dimensional cardboard good-looking guy.
Yeah.
That whose purpose is just to basically be there as a conflict for Liv. I want him, but I can't have him. And then, of course, you know, if we could get a weekly, you know, towel shirtless shot, that I wouldn't complain.
Here's a question to you, though. Do you think if Major was a woman, if Major was a female character, do you think
that I'd want to see her with the top off?
No, that he would get a separate storyline as well. Because while I love what they're doing, I can't help but question whether or not he would get a similar separate storyline if he was a female character. Because we know the track record of writers and creators with, you know, side female characters and how they end up. Whether or not she would be anything but a pretty little thing to look at.
Here are latest Gotham podcast from Granted. Well, I mean, I don't know. With Major, I don't know, because that's so intricately tied to their romantic relationship. Mm. You know, why he could have started out two-dimensional. I think I see a lot of potential for Peyton to grow. Even in the little scenes that she had in this, I found things about her that I liked and things that seemed believable and things that kind of helped flesh out that she has this life. Mm-hmm. And the fact that she's an attorney, we have her in there quite well. We do still need you know, better depth when it comes to the female characters, but I don't know, I'm still the way that they're treating all the characters in general so far, I think there is definitely that potential that, yes, if Major were a woman, she would have been fleshed out. Like I said, I don't know how, since the Major character is the love interest.
Yeah, but if Liv was a guy and Major was a woman, if we gender swap it, would the love interest get such a nice, interesting storyline?
I mean, I think in this case, yeah. I think with the way that they're setting up the whole zombie premise, yeah, I think it would. Mm-hmm. I'm anticipating, hoping that maybe Jackie, our sugar mama zombie, is going to get something more, because she's not like some of the other team bad zombie henchmen types. She's definitely up there on the hierarchy because she's already shown her loyalty to Blaine in ratting out the other guys. So I think they've positioned her character to be something that could be fleshed out much more and have a good storyline. It's not time yet in the telling of the iZombie tale for hers to come out. Just like I think they're, you know, here we have to have some more on Ravi now. Now we have to have some more on Clive. Now we need some more on Peyton. Now we need some more on Major. It's not time for her yet. So I think they would. The way they're setting everything up, I really do think they would.
That lets me, you know, that leaves me with an optimist view of the world. It's not going to last, mind you, but for now, let's stay optimistic.
No, it won't last, because we are going to have to podcast on Gotham again.
We are terrible people.
I should edit that out. I really should. I probably won't. Speaking of Major, and I'm going to say we skipped over a lot of some of the other crime stuff because it was just fluff and filler that was fine. But, you know, the whole skydiving crime, it got everything, I think, where it needed to be, where we see that we have more zombies than we thought, and they're not all just Blaine. I like the fact that we didn't have Blaine in this episode. We still had his presence with some of his henchmen, but I like the fact that the writers, I guess, are confident enough that we don't have to have the big baddie make an appearance every episode. It was nice not to see him.
He didn't take screen time from Arthur, which I approve of.
Well, but we still felt his presence, which I think was really cool, because this is where Major is this whole time. I mean, even when he's at the memorial for Holly, he leaves because he's so worried about Jerome and the kids that are at the shelter that he works at and you know, volunteers at. I like that we're seeing that Major has something more in his life. It's not just all fixated on Liv, that he really cares about these kids, and that makes me really happy to see, and that he's willing to go to bat for these kids. And while Clive is busy trying to solve this skydive crime that Liv that nobody thought was a crime, and then Liv told him is, and then we find out it is a crime because of the GHB and all this. Major goes to him for help in finding Jerome and these other kids, and really fights for Clive to take it seriously. And that I thought was a great use of Major's character.
Mm. Plus, it really helped to keep Clive on track, because he had, even though he didn't spend too much time on screen, he really did have a lot going on. He does mention that he has two open cases, like on the back burner, I suppose, that are not interesting enough for us to get an entire episode.
But I also like that because it shows that he's not the only cases he has are the ones that Liv's involved in, that he does other things. It's kind of like on Elementary. I like the fact that, you know, Marcus and Gregson and everything, the cases that Holmes and Watson are on are not the only cases they're solving. They're not just waiting to bring in the psychic team, you know, the great team. So I did like that moment. That was a small thing, but I like it.
It was nice. I also enjoyed the little sneak peek into the politics of the precinct and how the Department of, you know, Homicide works. And if it's not on the board, it doesn't exist. Like, it's not our problem. Right. And I really liked it because I imagine it would be the way things work in a, you know, in a homicide department, because if Clive has two cases already open, which, you know, he didn't find the killer or something,
still working on it,
why would he, you know, why would he spread himself even thinner by taking on the case that might not be a case, right? So I, in a way, as it was happening on screen, I could understand where his captain was coming from. This, yeah, that made sense in a, you know, time management organization kind of way. You cannot heal everything that ails the world, right? You cannot fix everything. You cannot find
it. And also everything needs to be compartmentalized. You know, it's like, he says I'm homicide, and then the chief reminds him, you're homicide, that's missing persons, that's not your job, which is a very big thing. You know, a lot of times it's like, it's not my job, not my job, I don't have to worry about it, I don't have to look at it, I don't care if it needs to get done, not my job. Or, you know, the people that try and work outside that, that did seem very real. It's not your job. Your job is these cases that are on the board.
Yeah, so it did feel real, and I could relate to the captain. I suppose. Are we calling him the captain or chief? What do we go with?
I don't know.
I like both.
I guess.
Chief? Okay, we can call him
Captain reminds me of Irving. So.
Yeah, plus we already have a major, so we can't have the big boss be attracted. The chief.
Now, something I really did love, too, was this episode brought open some more doors. We have this chief who we've seen before, and I've also seen him before because he plays a doctor on The Returned, which is another zombie undead show, so I think he's getting typecast in zombie shows. Which, by the way, The Returned started out exactly like the French one. It's taken a turn, and it's adding new stuff. And if you haven't been watching The Returned on A&E, that's a good one too. So I recommend that one. I liked that here's this character that we've just seen little bits of, because he's been on past episodes, you know, line here, line there. And he's talking about, you know, things like bowls of spaghetti or my porn and all this kind of stuff, and get to work and do all this kind of stuff. And we see him being a hard nose and, no, if it's not on the homicide board, you don't deal with it. You don't deal with missing persons. And we find him being brought coffee that he then adds hot sauce to.
Yeah.
We got another one.
He is either a zombie or an alien. And those who watched Roswell for 3 glorious years will know what I mean. Yeah, so he's either a zombie or an alien. This show, this network, it could be both.
I thought it was really interesting, too. I wonder where he is. So he's kind of nebulous. I think that Arthur Pendragon, because I acquiesce.
Good girl.
I don't want to get hurt, even across 7 time zones. I really think that Arthur is basically a good guy.
Yeah.
I really do. Because I don't want every zombie but Liv to be a baddie.
Plus, if he turns out bad, my heart will break. And it's already a tiny little black heart. So we cannot have it break because Arthur turns out to be a bad guy. So he has to be a good guy.
So I like that he seems to be a good guy. The chief, I think, is kind of nebulous. I mean, is he scared? Does he not know what's going on? Is he just riding the wave? Because when Clive brings up to him that he went down there and saw that there's missing persons, that there's all these missing people posted down there in this park of, you know, I'm sure like transients like Willie the Wino and stuff like that. But when Clive sees it, there's a lot of people missing. The chief shuts him down completely. And that's when we find out that he's a zombie. Nobody else knows, but we find out he is. So where does he fall in this? Is he part of Team Blame Zombie? Is he kind of on his own? Is he trying to cover it up? Where does he fall? So it's interesting that this character that really is a throwaway bit part, reoccurring bit part, now has some depth to him as well. Where is he? What does he do?
Yeah. Plus, how did he become zombie, right? Mm-hmm. Is he a part of Team Zombie on the Blaine side and not Team Camelot? It's all those questions that leave you interested in the show. And if this continues, I know that we've been, you know, on the fence, but I will be really thrilled if the show gets picked up. I know it's too soon to talk about it. It's only 5th episode. But, hey, the time where networks pick up shows and, you know, cancel them is coming up. Some shows already got cancelled. Some got picked up. And I am, you know, keeping my fingers crossed, because with so many supporting characters being more than two-dimensional, you know, here I am the robot who tells this line and says this line because the main character needs to hear it. I like that nothing's black or white, and I'm not going to say anything about Shades of Grey because it immediately brings up the need to say a certain number. But nothing's black or white, and nothing is, you know, certain with the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a show of great, really good, thought-out writing. So props to the writers. You might need help with the names, but you know how to handle everything else.
And the way they're meshing him together, because Clive, who I have to give him a shout out, loved seeing him doing the whole breaking the door down, you know, being that cop, not just smooth. Yeah, it was the spouse did it. The wife did it. Because if the husband's dead, the wife
let's
did
break
it. If the wife's dead, the husband did it. Yeah, he broke that down with some force. So way to go, Clive. It gets him now again mixed in, because right now the only zombie he's had contact with, not that he knows that there's zombies out there, is really Liv. But now with the chief, he's into this triangle even more. He's not like this degrees of separation. He's smack dab in the middle of it. And because of Major looking for Jerome and guilting, which was a really nice guilt way. I loved, you know, taking the tape and pinning up this picture.
Oh, that was a dirty trick. But I was so impressed.
It was dirty, but it was good.
So good.
Yeah. Doing those little things like that and getting Clive to go down to this park and Clive to talk to that one kid and find out all of this stuff. Clive is now smack dab in the middle of zombie land.
Mm.
And he doesn't even know it. And that, I think, is going to really be good for some of these upcoming episodes. Somebody else who's smack dab in the middle of zombie land and doesn't really know it is poor Major, because he goes down there and he sees our Blaine henchmen. And this is how Blaine really does keep his claws in this episode without ever making an appearance. He sees the guy with those Jerome's tennis shoes on. And major who's a pretty buff guy. I mean, I'm gonna say he works out. He goes in for the battle, not realizing this guy can go on full on zombie mode, and just throws him like Xena or Hercules would throw somebody, you know, and on some of those shows, across the skate park. Can I tell you something that really worried me?
Yeah.
When we saw Major lying there all bloody and the kids skateboarding around him, how dare they edit right to Liv and Ravi in the morgue and police bringing in body bags?
Oh, come on. What was going on through my mind was, no, you're too pretty to die. Please do not go after the henchmen. No, no, I enjoy you. I enjoy you shirtless. Stay away from the henchmen. And then when they cut to the morgue, I was like, oh, no, they didn't. Oh, no, they didn't.
Yeah.
Like, I do not approve of this. Nah. It was,
yeah, I was so worried.
Yeah. By the way, well played.
Thank you for not, because that was just, that was deliberately panicking editing there, because we just started this great new triangle. Not that you want to love triangle, but we just started this great new triangle and this great, you know, fleshing him out and Ravi and him playing games. Don't make me think that you're going to kill Major.
Yeah. But this is one of the things that led me to believe that this was part one of a two-parter. Because Holly's killer is in the wind, right? Major's left bloody in the skate park.
Yeah.
And there are those little tiny things that were not necessarily finished. Like, they didn't solve everything in one episode. So for a second there,
with a pretty bow.
Yeah. I thought, okay, any moment now we're going to see to be continued, because you know, the killer's in a win. Here's Major. Here's Clive. Here's Arthur leaving, and you know, possibly not coming back. I'm not sure what's going on. Hey, I got used to you delivering everything on a silver platter. You know. Here, you have your finished episode. So it felt weird. And that's my only problem. You had two minor ones, and that's my problem with the episode.
See, and I like it, because one of the criticisms is that we have this procedural standalone episode crime thing, but then we have this ongoing arc. And I think they're finding a way to kind of mix, where not every crime gets solved immediately every episode, that things do continue on. And so I actually like that. I don't think it's going to work every episode.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have your typical procedural where they realize who the bad guy is and they catch the bad guy. But I like the fact that there's those threads left hanging there, that we don't have a total resolution. And I'm hoping that'll make some people feel better about it, because that's some of the comments I'm reading, is how it's the procedural part is just being wrapped up too nice and shiny with a pretty red bow on it.
Well, as long as they remember about continuity and they don't just, forget all about it the next episode or the episode after that,
mm-hmm.
I will be okay with that. For me, it was a change of pace and with the plot points that they chose to leave hanging that left me, confused and unsettled and slightly worried, because Major stay with us, but we'll see.
On that note, since Mr. Pendragon brought the nice hot sauce and has now complicated things between Major and Liv even more, and the chief has the hot sauce and such, where on the Sci-Fi for Chicks Eye Zombie hotness scale are you going to rate this episode? On a scale there from Sweet Bell Banana Peppers all the way up to the Carolina Reaper. Where does this one fall for you?
Well, if I was to judge the episode on Arthur Pendragon alone, I would give him a perfect 10, because guy's got game and he's smooth, and I enjoyed him. I would enjoy him more if he was shirtless, but I've seen him shirtless already. Been redundant.
I think he's worked out since then, though.
Well, there's always, chance that we will see him next episode or the episode after that. Maybe he and Liv decide to hook up, and then we will be rewarded. But I'm going to say I always rate them higher than you for some reasons. This time I was torn between 8 and 9, actually. It's a solid 8, but it's a little more than that. And Arthur did help with that. So, yeah. I forgot my cheat sheet. So I cannot...
So you're like a piri-piri with a splash of Scotch bonnet.
Yes, that sounds delicious, and that sounds about right.
Piri-piri is actually very delicious and hot. I have some of that from Portugal when we went. See, this is where I love it, because I'm going to keep you on your toes.
Ooh.
This episode, I absolutely loved, and I would actually rate it higher, but we still have many more episodes to go, so I got to leave a little room. But this is the bar setter for me so far. This is a definite habanero Scotch bonnet. It's a 9 for
nice.
Me. Solid 9. And I, like I said, I'm leaving the 10 and the 10 plus just in case the next 8 episodes have something that really, really blows me away. I mean, after last week's, where the crime was almost off the charts in the bad way. And the Liv stuff was so, Liv was flat, and it was the men that were shining more. And the only thing that saved it for me last week was Blaine and all the badness. This one was so well-rounded. I loved seeing Liv. I loved seeing her love for life and why she was doing this, why she ate this brain when she had other options, that she was making this choice, why Major was doing things and the new zombie, and seeing that there are new zombies out there, that it's not kind of like in the Harry Potter thing where it's not us and then it's not good guys and Death Eaters,
yeah.
That there's these shades in between of other people that, or in that case, other witches and wizards. I loved this episode. So for me, this is a very solid habanero that
nice.
Could reach up to a weary if it wasn't for the fact it's only episode 5.
Nice. I approve of that. I approve of that. They are improving and I enjoy them.
We'll see how they do next week, because we have the episode Virtual Reality Bites, where Liv's next meal is way past the expiration date. I suddenly can't talk. And she inherits agoraphobia and computer gaming skills after eating a hacker's brain. I think this is going to lead to some fun times, maybe with Liv and Major and Ravi in the living room with the blackout curtains, maybe?
Probably.
Maybe? I don't know.
Probably. I'm looking forward to that.
I hope so. And hopefully we will see Mr. Pendragon again.
Hopefully.
Lowell Tracy, for those of you who are actually looking at the actual show.
Arthur
cast
Pendragon. Arthur Pendragon. Say with me. Arthur Pendragon.
I have. Arthur Pendragon. We will be back next week to talk about Virtual Reality Bites on iZombie. We are also starting this weekend Orphan Black, so make sure you check that out. That will be coming out immediately after the show airs, and you are not going to want to miss that season of Orphan Black. If you haven't seen it yet, make sure and go back and check up on seasons 1 and 2, because, hey, they're only 10 episodes each. That's an easy binge in the next few days. Easy. And we'll be back next week to talk more Gotham.
And iZombie.
Only 3 more episodes in that one. Do make sure to follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi for Chicks, and of course, subscribe to us on iTunes or the podcast platform of your choice, Sci-Fi for Chicks. We'd love to know what you thought about this episode and how you would rate it. You can email us, sci-fi4chicks@sci-fi4me.com, or call us on the hotline, 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-FI. And we'd love to hear what you thought also on Twitter. So, yeah, go over to Twitter. We're getting a little bit better. I'm getting a little more time to tweet. Sort of. Kind of. With our hashtags, like Ravi Rocks. Although it wasn't Ravi. We need a Arthur Pendragon hashtag.
That we do.
We need to figure one of those out. So keep an eye out. We'll have that there. Alex, thank you so much for joining me for this almost rantless podcast.
I know. It's like, it's the boss.
I love it. It was wonderful. We will see you next week. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.